Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. We are the number one Torah podcast on the net as rated by iTunes, and we're very pleased that you're here with us. Please continue to tell your friends about the podcast. Our listenership grows through your help. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as a Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
This week, we have a double portion. Parshiot Bahar and Bechukotai. The last two Parshiot of the Book of Vayikra. I would like to focus on the beginning of Parshat Bechukotai, the section which is generally known as the Tochacha, or the Blessings and Curses. And in this podcast, I would like to examine the blessings. In chapter 26, verse 3, Im bechukotai teleichu, if you will walk in my statutes, ve'et mitzvotai tishmoru, and observe my commandments, vasitem otam, and do them. Rashi raises the question, what is meant by walking in my statutes? It is clear it cannot be referring to the performance of the mitzvot, which is mentioned in the next part of the verse. Hence, Rashi says, Im bechukotai telechu, that you should be amelim batorah, toil in the study of Torah. The Pasuk is creating a progression, studying Torah connected with the performance of the mitzvot. But it is interesting that Rashi and the Midrash upon which he is based do not use the language of studying Torah, but of amelim batorah. Amelim is a much more intense form. It is the idea of one who works very, very hard in the study of Torah, one who is sweating, one who is struggling, one who encounters tremendous frustration. The rabbis generally understand chukim as those laws which defy our reason. Laws such as shatnez, the red heifer, where it is very difficult to come up with a rationale. It is therefore appropriate that the concept of amelim b'torah should be associated with chukim. It is very easy for people to study those topics, those concepts that are very accessible. It is much more difficult to study things that seem to be very removed from our reality, that sometimes seem to be in conflict with values very much ingrained by our culture. Yet this is the expectation of this section. Walk in my statutes. When you encounter those laws which defy your understanding, when it seems that you're coming to a brick wall, don't close the book. Don't back down. Keep on struggling. Keep on studying until you get a handle on the material. And even if that doesn't happen, continue studying because you recognize that this is the Word of God that ultimately may be mysterious but demands your engagement. It is this type of study that we have to be walking in. Walking in the sense of progression, growth. And that is what the Torah expects of us. It is not enough to just do the mitzvot. But the mitzvot have to be reinforced by study. Constant study. Studying which is always challenging us. Through which we grow. If we are prepared to make those demands upon ourselves, Then we have the flip side of the coin. What is God prepared to do for us? We come to the blessings, which are presented in a very progressive way. First, in verse 4, "And I will give you the rains in their proper time. The land will bring forth its bounty. The trees of the field will give forth their fruit." Those of us living in the land of Israel are very aware of the importance of the rains, and also of the season of the rains. Today, in the period between Pesach and Shavuot, we have passed the season of the rains. According to the Mishnah in Tanit, if it rains in this period, it is a curse, not a blessing. This is the period of the harvest. This is where we need dry, hot weather in order for things to ripen. Receiving rains in their proper time reflects the sense of being in synchronization with the natural order. But Rashi brings up another idea, which reflects this idea, a blessing within a blessing. What does it mean to receive the rains in their proper time? At a time when people are not outside. For example, Shabbat evening. The blessing is not only to have the rains come when the earth needs them, but to have the rains come when they are convenient to people, when they will not interfere with our daily regimen. Having the rains is then followed by the land bringing forth its bounty. It is as if we have this symbiotic relationship of heaven and earth. The heavens bring forth the rain, and the earth reciprocates by bringing forth its bounty. And Rashi even makes a comment on the trees of the field bringing forth their fruit. He says this is a reference to barren trees that in the future will bear fruit. The idea of the land bringing forth its bounty will be reflected in every single thing that grows. There will be nothing which is barren. Everything will give forth its fruit. And then we go on to the next verse. Verse 5. "And the threshing will extend until the harvest, and the harvest will extend until the planting. And you will eat your bread to satiation, and you will dwell securely in the land." On the one hand, this verse reflects the abundance. There will be so much which is being produced by the land. It will take a long time to thresh, a long time to harvest. But beyond that, there is this beautiful imagery of how each stage of the process immediately leads into the other. There is no interruption. There is this constant cycle of activity, which is once again a blessing within a blessing. The idea that people will be occupied. We know that unemployment, boredom, is something which is devastating to the human psyche. People need to be active. People need to feel a sense of accomplishment, a sense of goal, achievement, going from one step to the next. That is the bracha of this continuum. You will eat your bread to satisfaction. Rashi comments, you will eat a little, and it will be blessed in your stomach. Although there will be great abundance, people will be satisfied. It will not take much to make them satisfied. Living in a world of affluence, we see very often how the more people have, the less they're satisfied. The more they need, the more they want. Once again, the blessing within the blessing. You will have a lot, but you won't feel the need for so much. You will be satisfied with whatever you have, and you will dwell securely in your land. Very often, the more people have, the more insecure they are, the more fearful they are that someone else will take it away from them. Perhaps that someone else will have more than them. This feeling of us and them, this feeling of competition, creates angst, so that it is a further blessing to be happy with what we have, to be secure, to not feel that we will lose it. And perhaps what can reinforce that security is the fact that everyone is content with what they have. No one feels the need to have to get more, to get more at the expense of the other. The security described in this pasuk is a state of mind. Beyond the state of mind, it is an internal security. I have no reason to be concerned that my neighbor will somehow take it away from me. And then we go on in verse 6. And I will place peace in the land. You will lie down. You will not be afraid. I will cause to cease wild animals from the land. A sword will not pass through your land. Being secure is not the same as peace. Being secure means that I don't feel threatened. Peace is more than that. It is coexistence. It is sharing. The peace that it refers to, as the Ibn Ezra says, is peace amongst ourselves. So that if in the beginning of the bracha there is this description of the harmony of nature, of the different elements of nature, the synchronization, the clockwork, then there is also the peace between people in nature, the peace of mind of the individual, the harmony among the people. And in the end of verse 6, there is the idea that there is also no concern of the external threat. When we lie down, we don't have to be afraid. Afraid of wild animals. Afraid of enemies who will attack us. They will not come into our land. It's as if God has now created this utopian bubble which is not to be broken. And the Ramban, Nachmanides, commenting on verses 6 and 7, sees this as the messianic vision, sees this as a reality when the land of Israel will somehow revert back to the primordial state of the Garden of Eden, the state before Adam and Eve ate of the tree of knowledge, to a reality where there is no strife, no evil. In verse 7, you will chase your enemies, they will fall before you. 5 will chase 100, 110,000. There is not yet the sense of harmony with the world outside. The world outside is still a dangerous place. But even there, we have the upper hand. But then all of a sudden, in verse 9, we enter a new phase. I will turn to you. I will cause you to be fruitful. I will increase you. I will establish my covenant with you. Rashi brings the comment, a new covenant, not like the old one. The old one which was violated on numerous occasions. But a new one which will never be violated, never broken. There is a new phase in the relationship. You will be fruitful, you will multiply. The affluence will not be accompanied by the need to have zero population growth, by the concern that we have limited resources, hence we should limit our population. The opposite will be true. The more resources we have, the more we increase our population. The feeling that we have an expanding universe, an expanding reservoir of resources, where our goal is to constantly increase. Because increment is blessing. This is prefaced by God saying, I will turn to you. Although God has been relating to the people, intervening in the natural order, this is a further stage, a greater involvement. And we see how this involvement of God increases. In verse 10 and 11, you will eat of the old produce, the aged produce. The old you will take out from before the young. Normally, we prefer eating that which is fresh. The fresher, the tastier, the healthier. The more things age, the more withered, rotted they become. And once again, we have a reverse process. Things improve with age. And in theory, we would want to leave our produce as long as we can because it just gets better and better. But we have to somehow take it out for the new which is coming in. This eating of the old produce could also be seen in a metaphoric sense. Age or aging is something to be valued, something to be cherished. Our tendency nowadays is to highlight youth. Everyone wants to look young, feel young. But maybe there's a value in aging, because people who age have been through a lot of life experience, have matured, have developed their personalities, have a lot to offer to those who are just beginning their journey. Verse 11, I will establish my dwelling place in your midst. I will not be revolted by you, abhor you. I will walk in your midst. I will be to you a God, and you will be to me a people. God is no longer turning. God is actually dwelling. Not only is God dwelling, God is walking in our midst. The goal is to not just be in harmony with nature, to be at one with ourselves, to be at one with the people around us, but to ultimately have an I-thou relationship with God, the most intimate relationship with God. And once again, we encounter the blessing within the blessing. There are times when intimate relationships become explosive. The closer I become to somebody, the more I see their faults, the more critical I am. There are times when it is better to be at a distance, to be aloof, to see the beauty from afar. It is a remarkable blessing to be able to have an intimate relationship and to just have it grow in its beauty, to not allow the faults to revolt us, to perhaps notice only the beautiful parts, which then can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more the relationship is filled with honor and love, the more it generates honor and love. And the last phase, I am the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt, from an environment where you were slaves. I broke the staff of your yokes, and I had you walk upright. The ultimate bracha which is given to us as a people is to be able to make the movement from slavery to freedom, to be able to walk upright, to be able to walk upright parallel to God who walks upright in our midst, to actualize our majesty, our Tzelem Elokim, In all these blessings, I highlighted not only the objective reality, but the subjective interpretation. Objectively speaking, there can be abundance. There can be peace. There can be a situation where there is no reason to be afraid. But the people in that reality need to internalize that. They need to have that self-confidence. They need to have that peace of mind. As I mentioned earlier, the Ramban sees this as a messianic vision, one that was not yet actualized in Jewish history. It is a vision of the Jewish people becoming a Mamlechet Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh. As I mentioned, when we began the book of Vayikra, Vayikra focuses on creating a Jewish people who will have God walk in their midst. A Jewish people who, through their actions, invite God into their reality, radiate God in their reality. The Ramban, Nachmanides, in a very long section, on verse 11, develops his theology, reflected in a number of places in the Chumash, of three types of realities: the natural order, hidden miracles, revealed miracles. The natural order is what we recognize around us: the laws of physics, biology, the structure upon which the world exists. Miracles reflect divine intervention in the natural order. To have nature correlate, respond to human action. You do the mitzvot, you get the rains in their proper time. You don't do it, the rains are withheld. Hidden miracles are those acts which could be interpreted as being nature rather than divine intervention. But revealed miracles are things which cannot be mistaken for nature. The classic examples of those: the 10 plagues, the splitting of the Red Sea, the manna in the desert. Nachmanides notes in our section, if we have a nation, a mass of people who toil in Torah, observe the mitzvot, and are accordingly rewarded by God in creating an environment on a mass scale which reflects this absolute harmony of nature, people, and God, this becomes so extraordinary, so exceptional, that it is no longer a hidden miracle, but a revealed miracle. The messianic vision is not only to create a harmonious reality, a perfected world, but to create a reality where the reflection of that perfection is the presence of God, which is walking among us. We walk in God's statutes. God walks among us. We walk in God's statutes. We walk upright. The period between Pesach and Shavuot, as I mentioned last week, is a period of personality development, transformation. It is meant to be a period of national transformation. As we come nearer to Jerusalem Day and the following week, the festival of Shavuot, we need to constantly remind ourselves what our role is as the Jewish people, what our destiny is, of the gap between the vision and the reality, of the vision which can become a reality if we so desire. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated. Please send your email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.